The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome. It's good to be with you once again on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. This healthcare clinic is brought to you by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation. This foundation also brings to you the annual Women's Healthcare Symposium in March. The mission of the foundation is to save lives and protect your family. It does that through making each of you a lay expert in your own individual medical problems. This, in turn, will allow you to be a better partner with your existing doctor, leading to increased and more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency costs. I'll give you one quick example. I received an email a few months ago from a woman named Norma. She's in her late 50s, and she had attended our March of 2008 annual Women's Healthcare Symposium. She had attended the skin cancer seminar, and as she emailed to me, she was so impressed with the slides that were presented and the presentation of the physician expert that it had reminded her of a flat mole she had on her neck. And she was motivated because of that seminar to have it evaluated by a dermatologist. Well, long story short, it turned out to be a melanoma. And because she was able to get that lesion looked at and removed early, it saved her life. And she was able to have that removed for a few hundred dollars, when, of course, if she had waited even a few months, potentially could have ravaged and metastasized throughout her body, at which point in time she would have been looking at tens of or even hundreds of thousands of dollars to try and save her life. As melanoma, we all know, can kill within months. So she, of course, was very thankful to us and is now another one of our strong supporters and will be volunteering at the next annual symposium in March of 2009. This Saturday in Hyde Park, Tampa, is a fundraiser for Focus on Females. The fundraiser will have Anita Pointer of the Pointer Sisters Entertaining, as well as a huge fashion show with choreographed dancers and costumes, all for the Focus on Females Education Foundation. If interested, and I hope many, many of you are, please call Kit at 250-1253. That's area code 813-250-1253. The fundraiser comes with dinner served as well as drinks, and again, the entertainment fashion show all this Saturday night in Hyde Park, Tampa. And now, let's go to today's healthcare clinic topic, which is bladder incontinence. I would like to introduce Dr. Lennox Hoyt, who's with me today. Dr. Hoyt is the director of female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery at USF, and for those out of town, that's University of South Florida and Tampa General Hospitals. He treats women with prolapse, incontinence, bladder control problems, and pelvic pain. Lennox holds degrees in engineering from MIT and medicine from Stanford. His OBGYN residency training is from Harvard and fellowship training in urogynecology from Loyola. A board-certified OBGYN, he has authored articles on urogynecology and pelvic surgery and is a reviewer for medical journals. He speaks to lay and medical audiences internationally about childbirth injury and urogynecology. His clinical research seeks to understand why childbirth injuries happen to some women and not to others. Lennox, it's nice to have you here today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let's do this. We have a caller, Mary from Clearwater. Let's go ahead and talk to Mary. Mary, you're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. Do you have a question for Dr. Hoyt?
Oh, yes, I do. What my question is, I have, I believe, what they call lazy bladder, where I have an urgency to urinate. I have tried medications such as Vesicare, Detrol, and I'm using this patch, Oxytrol, now. But I find what happens after taking them for a few weeks, it's not working well anymore. And what happens is I find I don't have to go as often, but when I do get the urge to urinate, it's so fast, it's hard getting to the bathroom on time.
What do you think about that, Lennox?
Well, Mary, that's a very common problem experienced by many patients that come to see me. One of the first questions I would have for you at that point is that I just wanted to make sure that when your bladder does empty, that it empties well. One of the ways to have this type of symptom that you describe of urinary urgency and urgent incontinence is that the bladder is not emptying as well as it should to start with. And this can happen with women with prolapse, sometimes women with diabetes, and some neurological problems can have this. And so what's happening is the bladder never fully empties. So whenever a little more urine comes down from the kidneys, that triggers the, you know, the signal that you need to go, and you try to get to the bathroom in time and sometimes don't make it. What these drugs do, all of the drugs you described, Detrol, Vesicare, Enablex, Sanctura, including Oxytrol and Ditropan, is they actually slow the bladder muscle down. So if you find that you have a bladder that's already lazy and slowed down, and you slow it down some more, you can understand how that problem could become a little more difficult. I have a question for you, Mary, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
How did your doctor diagnose the lazy bladder syndrome? Was there
She had examined me, and she said that I did not have that the bladder has not dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked her about, I have a sister who had, I believe it's called a splint put in when she was having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helped her a lot, but this doctor told me that wouldn't work on me because I don't have the kind of problem where that would help me.
Yeah. When I talk to my patients, I talk about the two types of incontinence. One is the stress incontinence, which is the cough, laugh, leak incontinence. So coughing, laughing, leaking, straining down, and you leak urine. That's usually associated with weakness of the opening of the bladder tube, the bladder urethra, if you will. And women with that problem tend to benefit from putting those slings in.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, women with the kind of problem that you have sometimes can benefit from the medication, and if the medication doesn't work, next step beyond that can be, if you're interested, is a type of pacemaker for the bladder that can actually make the lazy bladder speed up a little bit and want to empty some more under better control. So that's something that's certainly available. It's called a bladder pacemaker. The fancy name is sacral neuromodulation. And that's certainly available to you.
Lennox, do you suggest at all pressing on the bladder externally? Does that help at all in assisting?
Yeah, emptying. You know, I've not offered that as a solution for women. One of the things that I do suggest to women, especially those who have had surgery, sling surgery that Mary had mentioned, that have trouble emptying the bladder, is to actually have them sit a little bit above the toilet and tilt their buttocks up in the air. That can help to straighten out the urine tube, mm-hmm. and maybe allow the urine to come out better.
Hmm. Oh, okay. That makes some sense. Now, do you believe that those, I believe they call them Kegel exercises, help?
You know, I see a lot of women with pelvic pain related to musculoskeletal problems in the pelvic floor. And a lot of these women are women who have been doing years upon years of Kegel exercises to prevent urinary incontinence and ended up getting trigger points or spasms in the pelvic floor muscles. So, yes, I recommend Kegel exercises, but I want to have someone qualified teach you how to do them, to do the contraction and relaxation to make sure you don't get those trigger points. I don't think Kegels by themselves will help with the specific problem. Mary, I think most important thing for us is to know, in your case, whether that bladder empties well or not as it stands. And it doesn't sound like you've had that test yet. The test is called a post-void residual. So you basically would empty your bladder, and we would use either an ultrasound machine over your tummy or pass a catheter to make sure the bladder is emptying well. I think that would be the first step.
Oh, they did that mm-hmm. kind of test where they did that ultrasound on me after I emptied my bladder.
And was your bladder emptying well?
They said yes.
Okay.
Lennox, does diet, I'm thinking caffeine, juices, can Mary perhaps alter her diet to have less of a problem until this issue is resolved?
Certainly. Many women try to attack this problem by decreasing the fluid intake that they have. And that's certainly a strategy and an option. Other medications like caffeine, alcohol, beer, spicy foods, and juices, carbonated juices and such, can increase the output of the kidney and can lead women to have more of these problems. My first take on it, though, is to try to get the bladder problem itself looked after, because it's certainly not a normal problem, and it's you know, at this day and age, it's curable. The problem is curable, if not with medication, certainly with the pacemaker.
And, of course, decreasing fluid intake in Florida may not be a good idea for other health and medical issues.
Absolutely.
Well, great. Mary, do you have a follow-up question?
No, I think that's it. I'm going to speak to her about this pacemaker and see if perhaps I can get some relief from this by using that. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, all right, Mary. Thanks very much. Enjoyed having you.
Thank you. Bye.
We are here on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We'll be back in a flash.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This is Hugh Hewitt. You won't hear the story of Sarah Palin's life and experience in the mainstream media, but Town Hall Magazine is making her in-depth biography available to you with your subscription.
I was just your average hockey mom and signed up for the PTA.
Go to townhall.com and get your free copy of the book simply titled Sarah. This fresh, compelling, and true life story is available with Town Hall Magazine's in-depth report on how she will govern as vice president. Subscribe now at townhall.com for the special Sarah Palin biography. That's townhall.com.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness. Plus, begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking about bladder incontinence and other bladder issues with Dr. Lennox Hoyt. When we think about the bladder, of course, there's two different kinds of bladder in the body, the human body. There's a gallbladder, which, of course, sits behind the liver, which is responsible for collecting and storing bile for digestive issues. And then, of course, there's the urinary bladder, which is what we're talking about and focusing on today. Lennox, would you give us just an overall overview of the anatomy, how urine is made, and what the function of the urinary bladder is?
Oh, great. Good question. Well, first of all, think of the blood running through the blood vessels, which is pumped by the heart out into the arteries and out to the organs. That blood contains oxygen and nutrients, which are made available to the organs. And then it's returned back up through the veins, back to the right side of the heart, where it's pushed through the lungs, reoxygenated, and recycled. The organs responsible for controlling the amount of fluid that stays within your bloodstream are two. One is the fluid that you take in by mouth, you drink, and that gets absorbed directly into the bloodstream as fluid. And the kidneys really are responsible for managing how much fluid we keep on board. Humans typically have about 5 liters of blood on board, fluid on board in the blood vessels, and the kidney's job is to make sure that that doesn't go down to 2 or up to 6 or 7. And so keeping the blood fluid levels constant is the job of the kidneys. Now, complex organ, but the kidney basically filters the blood, filters out, removes excess fluid, and also removes toxins from the blood that shouldn't be there. It also regulates the electrolytes and the blood chemicals that can control the heart. So blood filters through the kidney. The kidney gets rid of excess fluid or holds onto it, depending on what your status is in terms of your fluid load, and passes that fluid through some tubes called the ureters down into the bladder. If you think about just up behind the breast muscles, if you look towards the back and just below that would be the kidneys, which are lodged in the back. The kidney tubes called the ureters bring this fluid from left and right kidney down into the bladder, which is down in the pelvis, down in the area of the pubic bone.
And, of course, there's only one urinary bladder.
One urinary bladder, two kidney tubes coming in, and then the urinary bladder is a muscle that actually can relax and store the urine.
Okay, Lennox, let me interrupt here for a moment. We'll continue the anatomy. I think it's a very important anatomy lesson at this in a moment. At this point, we do have a caller, Lisa. Lisa, you're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. Do you have a question for Dr. Lennox Hoyt?
Yes, Dr. Hoyt, I was wondering, I'm a very busy mother of four, and a lot of times I put off going to the restroom, and I was told by a friend of mine that if you do that, you can, you know, have problems like urinary tract infections and things like that. Is that true?
You know, that's an interesting question, Lisa, and we expect and we think that women and men should be urinating about 8 to 12 times during the day. I get a lot of patients who come to me, like doctors, airline pilots, people, busy mothers, school teachers, that sort, said that, well, Dr. Hood, I have a strong bladder and I only go twice a day. We don't think that's so good because that is keeping the urine in the bladder for a little bit longer than it needs to. It can also stretch the bladder in a way that is probably not good in the long term. And I don't have any data to give to you, but our sense is that you don't want that bladder holding more than 500 or 600 cc's of urine. I think if you're holding a liter and a half at a time, that's probably not good. If you're urinating a few times daily, your risk, and your bladder's emptying well, your risk of bladder infections is probably low. So I would not agree necessarily with the fact that going a few times would lead to increased bladder infections. But it's probably not good in the long term for the bladder.
Lennox, is it possible that if you do retain urine in your bladder, whether it be intentionally or the fact that maybe you're unable to fully remove all the urine that's in the bladder, evacuate all the urine that's in your bladder, is there a possible risk of, over the long term, a chronic adverse impact on the cells lining that bladder exposed to, you know, toxins?
Yeah. I don't know that there's data to support that. I do know that women, one of the risk factors for recurrent urinary tract infections, Lisa, are those women who have had surgeries on the bladder neck, for example, where they chronically can't empty their bladder. Even when they go to the bathroom and they empty, they feel they're done. They still have 200-300 cc's in there. Those women certainly are at higher risk for recurrent bladder infections.
So there's no risk of any dysplastic or abnormal cellular issues?
Yeah, we don't have data to say that.
I had one other question.
Sure.
You mentioned something about not fully emptying your bladder. Sometimes, and I've just noticed actually the past few months, when I do go to the restroom, I can sit there for a few minutes longer, and then I have more still there.
Absolutely.
Now, I've had four children, and I've never had a C-section. Does that have a correlation?
There may be. You know, I don't know if you've seen a gynecologist recently, but women with prolapse, which is a drooping down of the vagina, in which the bladder can fall down with it, tend to have issues related to urinary retention as well. So one of the things I might suggest with this is that when you go to the restroom, rather than pushing down, I might suggest, like we suggested to the earlier caller, Mary, is to actually try and tilt your buttocks up in the air a little bit, almost like arch your back and your bottom backwards a little bit. That should straighten out the bladder tube and allow you to empty more.
And I actually was diagnosed with prolapse.
Yeah, well, so definitely. So prolapse would definitely put a kink, if you will, in that works.
Okay.
So that's one reason to have the prolapse fix, is to actually make the bladder empty better.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
So Lennox, in that case, with a vaginal prolapse, does that suggest then that the vagina is actually an important organ or tissue to enable the entire bladder to contract against it?
Absolutely, the entire pelvic floor system. You know, if you think about the vagina as a long muscular tube. The tube is held off at the top. It's pulled up at the top by usually the uterus or ligaments up there. On the sides, it's pulled off to the sides of the inside of the pelvis. On the front of this tube sits the bladder and the bladder urethra. So if you think of the vagina like a trampoline, the bladder is actually sitting on top of this trampoline, and it depends exquisitely on the fact that the vagina is holding the bladder up in a straight fashion. Women that have prolapse lose support of the vagina that's right underneath the bladder. So if you imagine the bladder itself falling down with the vagina protruding out, then the path of getting the urine out to urinate, if you will, that path is obstructed because of the kinking. And that can make retention, urinary retention, a problem, and then bladder infection.
Beautiful. I'm an eye surgeon, and I'm learning so much doing this show. I love it.
Well, great.
Okay. We have a caller, but we will first go to a break. We'll be right back with more on bladder incontinence and other bladder issues. We're all learning today on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic with Steve Maskin.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. John McCain is hitting three states today while Barack Obama focuses on one. McCain has scheduled rallies in Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and in Florida later. Obama is stumping in Ohio. A new poll in the Buckeye State by the Columbus Dispatch has Obama leading McCain by 6 points there. That's down 1 point in the past month. McCain aides say Ohio is crucial for them. McCain also says the polls may have left him behind, but he will come back. Former Senator Fred Thompson agrees, saying people have, quote, given him up for dead and been wrong before. Meanwhile, Obama's campaign manager says they have many ways to win and don't have to pull a, quote, inside straight, so to speak. The head of Israel's Internal Security Service says he fears an assassination attempt on an Israeli leader to try and undermine the peace movement with the Palestinians. He specifically mentioned Jewish extremists as possible culprits. More details at srnnews.com.
You ever have one of those days?
In just
where
2 days, we will select our next president.
We need to win Ohio November the 4th. And with your help, we're going to win Ohio.
Every day, there's a new story.
As president, he would continue the policies that have put our economy into crisis and, I believe, endangered our national security.
Every day, there's a bigger story behind the story. Stay informed and count down the race to the White House with us. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Hello, Tampa Bay. This is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians, resumes for the 55th winter season, Monday, November 3rd, right here across Florida and on Tampa Bay's WGUL. Make sure to tell your friends and neighbors. Please join me throughout the winter and stay in touch with the news, weather, stocks, and sports information you need from home every day, Monday through Friday. That's Canada Calling, a broadcast tradition for 3 decades here on Talk Radio 860. WGUL.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. Before we resume discussion of bladder incontinence and other bladder issues, I'd like to share with you a case of a patient that came to my practice this past week. I think it's an instructive case and will be helpful to all listening. It's actually a physician who came to me a few months ago initially, while I was scrubbing for a case in the operating room suite, and he had shared with me that he had had shingles in his left eye. He developed shingles in his left eye a few months earlier, and he was being treated, but his condition, his vision in that eye was deteriorating. He was concerned about it. That afternoon, I saw him in my office, and indeed, he was legally blind in his left eye, and from the shingles. Now, shingles causes a loss of sensation of the cornea and ocular surface, and because of that, the eye becomes dry. The blinking phenomena is altered and less effective, and the ocular surface becomes sensitive to medications and preservatives. The physician was being treated, unfortunately, was actually aggravating the problem rather than helping the problem. So we switched his medications around, and ultimately he wound up in follow-up this week seeing 20/20 in that left eye, and of course he's thrilled, as we all are. The message here is that dry eye is very important to recognize if you have it. There are different causes of dry eye. This particular case, of course, was caused by shingles. If you or any of your friends or neighbors or loved ones have shingles or have had shingles in the eye, it is very important to receive the appropriate care, because you don't necessarily have to go blind from this disease, although it is a very potentially devastating disease. Shingles needs to be treated appropriately in the acute setting when you first get the shingles, as well as chronically. Shingles in the eye can affect you the rest of your life. Now, I just want to share that with you because it is important and potentially can affect us all. At this point, I'd like to return to bladder incontinence with Dr. Lennox Hoyt. And on the phone, we have Kim from Tampa. Kim, you are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. Do you have a question for Dr. Hoyt?
Actually, not so much a question. I had bladder incontinence. I had the laughing, coughing, sneezing, where I had terrible leakage from the bladder, and it, you know, started out being not so obtrusive or anything, but as time went on, you know, it affects your lifestyle, affects, you know, how you, you know, how you live your life, and you think something is so wrong with you, but and you think that it always has to be that way. And my case was kind of unique because when I first had the problem, I initially had a vaginal sling put in, and it that really stopped all the symptoms. But the first time I did it, I kind of had the other problem. I couldn't urinate. I went through 2 weeks of suffering before everything became normal again. And that lasted for about 9 months, and then the symptoms of the incontinence returned again. And this time when I had the procedure done, the recovery part was completely different, and I can tell you that right now it made such a big difference. And I was very afraid to do it again, but I'm very happy that I did at this point because I was able you know, to return basically to a normal lifestyle.
Kim, let me ask you. Kim, let me ask you for just for clarification. Did you have a second sling performed, or was it a different surgery completely?
No, I had a second sling put in. Only it was a different material than the first one. What had happened is my body had attacked the first one. You know, obviously with something foreign in my body, and the body basically deteriorated it. But when I did the sling the second time, it was a different material that won't allow my body to do that again. And I have had very good results since the second procedure I had done. So basically, I guess what I'm trying to encourage, if there is any women out there that, you know, are thinking about having it done or are kind of afraid to have it done, it is a little inconvenience for a couple weeks maybe, but it really does change your life for the better if you can fix the problem, and it can be fixed.
Well, Lennox, would you like to comment on this case?
Absolutely. Thanks thanks for your call, Kim. I think the point that you may be raising is that the way that we put the sling in is pretty much constant, but the types of materials that can be used to put the, to make the sling from can actually make a big difference. Traditionally, we've used a patient's own tissue in order to make the sling, but that's a bigger procedure, and it's a little more complicated in terms of the recovery. As we've evolved, we've used foreign materials, synthetic materials, and some animal-based materials. One of the things that I found with the animal-based materials, mostly porcine-derived collagen-type materials, is that some women's bodies' immune system will attack the foreign animal-based material and destroy it, and other women's bodies will accept it. Since I can't predict which women will have that problem, I tend to use more of a synthetic polypropylene sling, which is immune to attack from the body. And so once it's in place, it tends to stay in place and will outlive the patient. The downside of using that type of material is that if it's not put in correctly, there can be a risk of having that material erode into the bladder or vagina. And so that's why I encourage my patients to visit with a physician that's skilled and experienced, well-trained in putting the sling material in and in managing any complications that will occur. But that was an excellent point from Kimberly. I appreciate the call. And just want women to know that even though you've had an attempt at a procedure before and it didn't quite work, there still remain options for treating this type of incontinence.
Excellent. So are you doing well now, Kimberly?
Yes, I'm doing very well now. Like I said, I feel like I have my life back again. So, and I almost felt guilty in the beginning because I realized I didn't have anything life-threatening. I didn't have any tumor or cancer or anything like that, but it affects your lifestyle. It does. And, you know, by doing this procedure the second time, like I said, I feel like I have my life back again. And it really did make a big difference.
And how old are you, Kim?
I am 42.
Do you have children?
Yes, I have one child.
Lennox, do you find that this type of bladder incontinence has any relation at all to having had children?
Absolutely. One of the prime risks for developing urinary incontinence is childbirth, vaginal childbirth usually. Also, we are discovering that women who have been pregnant and have had cesarean sections will also have some risk of increased risk of bladder incontinence, usually of a different type. Women that have not had children at all, but that do a lot of heavy lifting, that are obese, that have diabetes, that may have collagen issues like Marfan syndrome and such, can also be at risk. But the risk level is a whole lot different if you don't have children.
Mm-hmm.
Childbirth is the prime risk.
I see. Okay, Kim, do you have any follow-up questions or comments?
No, but I just thought I might encourage other women, if they're in that position and they're thinking about it, it's a good thing to go ahead and consider doing the procedure.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you very much. It is very important to have input from people like yourself to encourage people that may be suffering out there to go ahead and really identify the right surgeon who can manage their problem expertly, and to have to encourage people to not suffer.
That's a good, Steve, that's a really an excellent point, because a lot of the women that come to me, I ask them how long they've been having this problem, and they've gone on 5, 10, 15 years, and I'm, okay, what took you so long? Well, the last person I talked to said that, the procedure is not going to work. The last person I talked to said that, well, you have to repeat it again in 3 years. So, everybody has a story about why it is the incontinence solutions don't last, but we live in an age now where the success of these procedures are really quite durable and quite outstanding. So I encourage all women who have issues with bladder incontinence to take their lives back and have something done about it.
Great. Thank you very much, Kimberly. Okay. I'm curious, Lennox, you have a degree in engineering from MIT. Do you use that knowledge and that expertise in your practice now? Does that experience with engineering help you in evaluating what your
sure.
patients in your practice do?
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the benefits of having been trained as an engineer is that that training forces you to think about solutions to problems, and how you achieve them, what's the physics, what's the engineering question behind the problem that you face. And I was happy when I arrived in medicine to realize that I could use that thinking process to help create solutions for women that are really individualized. A lot of the problems that women come in with start out looking very similar. So you might see 10 women who come in and say, I have leakage from my bladder. And there might be 3 or 4 different reasons why they're having it. So those 10 women don't all get the same solution.
Right.
And that engineering mind allows one to think really critically about what the optimum solution is. One of the things, though, I keep telling my patient is that despite the fact that we're dealing with a mechanical, often mechanical issue, we're still one human being dealing with the other. And so the part of the training that we get in medicine, in addition to the technical piece, is learning how to listen to our patients and learning how to hear what for them is the real problem. And I'll give you an example of this. You might have one woman who comes in and says, well, I leak all the time. I get up and I leak. I walk, I leak. I snap, And then another woman might come in and say, doc, it's just when I swing that golf club, that number, whatever golf club I swing it to try to get that long drive, that's when I leak, and that's a problem. And I'm like, okay, you don't leak through most of your life, but it leaks. You leak with the golf swing, and that golf swing matters to her. And so she is just as serious a patient in need of fixing. As much as the other woman who leaks all the time, who can't go anywhere.
It's a quality of life issue.
Absolutely, and quality of life is what the woman says it is for her.
I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you evaluate a situation where a patient thinks that they have a bladder infection, but all the tests keep coming back negative?
That's a really interesting question, and that takes us down another path of what I do. The symptoms of a bladder infection really are feeling like you have to go all the time, frequency to urinate, feeling like you're not completely emptying, and a sensation that the bladder is always full. Often that's associated with a urinary tract infection. Many women would come in with those symptoms, and their cultures would be negative. In that case, you find that when I examine these patients and look at the muscles in the pelvic floor, the muscles that Mary asked about earlier with the Kegels, those muscles are so tightly held and they have active trigger points in them that you touch them in the pelvic floor muscles and they feel like they have to go urinate. Mm-hmm. Often those women could benefit from rehabilitation of the pelvic floor muscles with physical therapy, learning how to relax the pelvic floor muscles, and often that can make that bladder symptom, that symptom go away. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I might suggest as well is that if you have the symptoms of a UTI, the muscles are not the problem. Those women are candidates for those medications that we talked about earlier that can slow the bladder down. I'd caution my patients that if they, you know, if they take about 4 weeks of those medications and they're still having the problems, then they need to see their urogynecologist or urologist to get further evaluation.
So certainly if you have an infection, you certainly want to be treated with the antibiotics instead of or in addition to the other medications to that slows the bladder muscle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, 9 women out of 10 that show up with bladder symptoms like that have a bladder infection and you want to treat it. Antibiotics treat it, they cure it, and it takes about a week.
Right, very good. How about having to get up more often at nighttime to urinate?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's we call that nocturia, and as we all get older, men and women, our need to urinate more at night will increase. And so many of my patients come back, you know, they're urinating once or twice at night when they didn't, when they were teenagers. We consider that normal. 3 or 4 or 5 times at night usually is pointing to a different problem. Often that problem is related to problems of fluid shifting in the body. So you spend most of your day standing up. A lot of the fluid collects in the legs. When you lie down to go to bed, the kidney then experiences a lot more of that fluid load and, you know, creates an increased urine output situation. So that's one. Let's see. Other things could include fluid intake late at night as well, and certainly overactive bladder symptoms can also be more pronounced at night.
Excellent. Thanks very much. We are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic discussing bladder issues, bladder incontinence, with Dr. Lennox Hoyt. We'll be back in a flash.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Hi, this is Chris Gould, General Manager here at WGUL. As we wind down to Election Day, we've all noticed the prominent professions of faith heard throughout the campaign from Senator Barack Obama. I'm encouraged by that, as I'm heartened that neither ethnicity nor gender remains a barrier to the highest offices and the most significant seats of power that our great democracy has to offer. But I am troubled by Barack Obama's repeated and very clear opposition to the efforts designed to protect traditional marriage. He has described this legislation to protect marriage as, quote, divisive and discriminatory. Even more disturbing is the overwhelming pro-abortion record that spans his entire political career, putting him among the most extreme pro-abortion candidates in the country. While it's good to hear expressions of faith in the public square, it's clear that Barack Obama does not stand with me on these issues, the ones that are most near and dear to my heart. Your right to vote is a hard-fought privilege. Please be sure to exercise that right on November 4th.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We've been talking all hour about bladder incontinence and bladder issues with Dr. Lennox Hoyt. And on the line, we have Stacy from Sarasota. Stacy, you are on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. Do you have a question for Dr. Hoyt?
Well, I'm a patient of Dr. Hoyt's, and I just wanted to let everybody know that Dr. Hoyt has pretty much saved my life. I've suffered for, you know, pretty much my whole life, but after I had my last child, things were just awful. I mean, I had the cough, the laugh, the sneeze, you know, walking, running, jumping, everything. And he was my number four surgery, and he's my last. I mean, I can run, I can jump, I can laugh, I can cough, I can sneeze, you know. I can do everything that I wasn't able to do before.
Excellent.
I'm young. I'm only 31.
That's right.
And it's, you know.
What kind of surgeries had you had before you went to Dr. Hoyt?
My first surgery was a sling out of a cadaver, you know, the cadaver skin, I believe. And then my second one was collagen injections. And my third one was microbeads. And the one that Dr. Hoyt did was out of my own skin, my fascia.
This was a sling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A sling.
And it worked beautifully?
Oh, beautifully, yes. I am so happy.
Well, Lennox,
so is my family.
This is a different approach than the proline sling that you had mentioned before. Would you comment?
Certainly. And you know, if our caller doesn't mind, I'll go and can I mention some details?
Please do.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I think what had happened in this particular case, and you asked about the engineering training. I had noticed on the examination here that this particular urethra, which is the bladder tube, normally is about 3 centimeters long. In most women, and in her case, it was just about half that length. And I don't know if that was related to, you know, childbirth injury or just congenital. A shorter urethra would make it difficult, more difficult for a sling to work, because most of the traditional modern-day slings tend to work in the middle of the urethra, which in her case just wasn't present. So using her own tissue, the idea was to bring that sling material and put it much closer to the bladder neck, if you will, or the location right at the bladder and the urethra, and really strategically tighten it up in a way that would allow her to still be able to urinate without tightening it so much that she would be put into retention. And that was a little bit of a nail biter, but we were able to apply some techniques in the operating room that allowed us to test and see while she was under anesthesia that that she would still be able to empty her bladder.
And this was autologous. You took the sling material from her own body.
Right. And so this is a little bit of a longer procedure now. It involves making an incision above the pubic bone in the abdomen, probably about 2.5-3 inches wide, going underneath, taking some of that strong tissue deep underneath the skin, and using that to make the sling material, and then using sutures to hold it up and tie it down around the front.
So this has the beauty of not being rejected material.
Absolutely.
And it probably also has the advantage of not creating mechanical potential mechanical trauma that a proline sling could
do. Right. Potentially. I think the major advantage of this is that because we didn't have much urethra to work with, we were able to get this sling right at the level of the bladder neck.
Beautiful.
So that it could do its job. It's a harder procedure, much more technically difficult, much more challenging, a longer recovery time for the patient. But in a setting where there was a previous failure, one or two more failures, and an abnormal urethral situation, it was the one that made the most sense.
And is it the case that with each additional failure that urethra potentially could get shorter and shorter?
Well, usually not. Most of the work that gets done is around the urethra. It's not designed to shorten the urethra, so I don't have an explanation as to why our caller's urethra was much shorter than usual, but it was not. It was half the length of what it normally would be.
Right. Well, excellent. So, Stacy, how long ago did you have your successful surgery?
About 7 weeks ago.
Okay, and when did you start noticing that it's really restored the kind of life that you had always wanted and hoped for?
2 weeks after, because I had a catheter in the first 2 weeks, so as soon as that came out, I had a few issues, but, it took a while for it to had to get back to normal, your bladder, and after the catheter came out. But after that, I've been wonderful. So I don't have to wear a pad or anything anymore.
So it's been about 5 weeks already?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And did you say you have children?
I have two.
You have two children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone else in your family? Is there a family history of bladder problems?
No.
Sisters?
I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Right.
And Stacy makes a good point in that, we usually think of incontinence, bladder issues, as an older woman's issue. This it can happen to women. I've had 28-year-olds come into the practice with this problem. So fixing, getting it repaired in a younger woman is much more of an issue. And so we need to be more proactive about dealing with the fact that younger women have this problem and it needs attention as well.
Well, certainly. And, I mean, has to run after two little kids. How old are your children, Stacy?
10 and 8.
Like I said, you're running after them. And so I guess it's a big advantage not to have to be concerned about having to run to the bathroom.
Right. Now, I mean, they would always say, Mom, let's do this, let's do that. I'm like, oh, well, I can't, I'm like, all right, let's go throw the ball or let's go, for a walk or, now we can go to the amusement parks and not have to worry about, what's going to happen. So.
And Lennox, what's the proper prognosis? Do you expect this to?
Yeah, usually when with the autologous slings and actually all the slings that we do that are non-cadaveric, non-animal, once you get past the 6-week mark and it's working, they work.
Okay. Stacy, we'd like to thank you very much for calling the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. One reminder for everybody out there, again, this Saturday night is a fundraiser for the Focus on Females Education Foundation. Anita Pointer, incredible fashion show, choreographed dancers and costumes. Call KIT 250-1253. And lastly, I'd like to thank my good friend, Dr. Lennox Hoyt. Thank you for sharing your expertise on this week's Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And next week, we'll be talking about multiple sclerosis right here on Sunday at 1 p.m. on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. See you then.
Your choice for intelligent talk. Bennett, Gallagher, Prager, Medved, Hewitt. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative